Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on miracle food cures from the Bible when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court is a fool for a client, but what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said to you, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if your carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or fix his own steps has to be incompetent? You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor of law at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said about these budding young students who are tomorrow's lawyers. He said it's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. He said it's worse than that. Most of our students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, seen a real honest-to-God contract, will, promissory note, or deed, and a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel, and a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients that it is a cruel hoax, unquote. That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, the last item that we needed to cover here was this thing called barley. Barley green is a product made from barley. But what is it about barley that makes barley such a powerful, miraculous superfood? Well, scientists today believe that it's the chlorophyll in the barley. Well, that and wheatgrass and other grasses. Many scientists attribute the healing power of barley and barley juice to the chlorophyll. In his book, Nature's Healing Grasses, published in 1960, H.E. Kirshner, M.D., says chlorophyll, the healer, is at once powerful and bland, devastating to germs, yet gentle to wounded body tissues. Exactly how it works is still nature's secret, but to the layman, at least, the phenomenon seems to act like magic. In 1980, Dr. Chu Nan Lee at the University of Texas Medical Center reported that the more chlorophyll in a vegetable, the greater the protection from cancer-causing substances, and barley is loaded with it. Now, Ames testing shows that chlorophyll neutralizes the cancer-causing action of mixtures of coal dust, tobacco, fried beef, and other compounds. In this capacity, it is more effective than vitamin A, vitamin C, or vitamin E against mutations from the same mixtures. Heinemann attributes the power of barley juice and wheatgrass to chlorophyll. Doctors Charles Elson and Walter Troll say that the so-called protease inhibitors in barley and other seeds suppress cancer-causing agents in the intestinal tract. Japanese researchers have discovered a protein, they labeled it P4D1 in barley grass juice, that seems to protect cells from ultraviolet radiation and a specific carcinogen. This was said to be the result of the simulation of DNA repair by this protein. Now, both the protein and another in barley grass juice, D1G1, have been shown to have anti-inflammatory activity when injected into laboratory animals. In addition, both of these barley compounds are remarkably free from any side effects. The number of surface conditions in which chlorophyll has been successfully used would be unbelievable were they not so well documented, says Ron Siebold in Cereal Grass, Nature's Greatest Health Gift. Chlorophyll heals wounds, stimulates repair of damaged tissues, and inhibits growth of the bacteria. Medical literature is replete with reports demonstrating these effects. Certain wounds and sores due to surgery, compound fractures, bone inflammation, bed sores, and routine cuts and scrapes all show fast and dramatic improvement with the topical use of chlorophyll. Chlorophyll and chlorophyll therapy has saved limbs from amputation. In hundreds of experiments and trials on humans and animals, chlorophyll therapy has always been shown to have no toxic side effects. Not just low toxicity, but rather no toxicity. Whether it's ingested, injected, or rubbed onto a surface, this fact alone makes chlorophyll one of the most unique therapeutic substances known to medical science today. And it speeds healing. Dr. H. Collins demonstrated that the healing time of wounds is shorter with chlorophyll therapy than with penicillin, vitamin D, sulfanilamide, or no treatment at all. Chlorophyll speeds wound healing by increasing the amount of blood nutrients available for tissue repair. It decreases swelling due to its mild blood thinning or heparin-like property. Burns caused by heat, chemicals, and radiation heal faster with chlorophyll therapy, whether or not they are infected, says Siebel. Chlorophyll was used to prolong the survival of skin grafts before the development of immune-suppressing drugs, which are now used today. Now, there are several reported cases of the successful use of chlorophyll for bacterial endocarditis, an infection of the tissue surrounding the heart. Chlorophyll has also been used successfully to treat chronic and acute sinusitis, vaginal infections, and chronic rectal lesions. And it reduces pain, inflammation, and gum diseases. Dentists and physicians have successfully used chlorophyll to control mouth infections such as pyorrhea, Vincent's angina, also known as trench mouth. Chlorophyll solutions provide significant relief of pain and pain reduction of inflammation and the control of odor for patients with serious mouth diseases, says Siebel. Peptic ulcers healed faster. Chlorophyll has also been shown to be extremely effective in speeding the healing of peptic ulcers, wounds which develop internally in the gastrointestinal tract, says Siebel, and several studies document the use of chlorophyll in the treatment of ulcers resistant to more conventional therapies. The results are quite impressive. In the Ofenkrantz study, 20 of the 27 patients with chronic ulcers were relieved of pain and other symptoms in 24 to 72 hours, and complete healing of damaged tissues was demonstrated by X-ray examination and occurred in 20 of 24 cases, within 2 to 7 weeks. And these reports included case descriptions of dramatic recoveries from severe long-standing problems. And there's an extra benefit. Researchers observed a side effect when chlorophyll was used to treat peptic ulcers. Chlorophyll tended to promote regularity in the patients studied. And according to several investigators, chlorophyll did not act simply to stimulate bowel activity, as does a laxative, but rather it promotes bowel regularity, stimulating bowel action only when the action was sluggish. European investigations report favorable preliminary results in the use of chlorophyll in the treatment of pancreatitis. The chlorophyll is thought to influence several enzymic reactions which complicate the disease, and patients' liver from making bad cholesterol. For years, scientists have been trying to find out why vegetarians tend to escape heart attacks, strokes, and diabetes, and high blood pressure, and high cholesterol, bad LDL cholesterol in certain cancers. Well, Dr. Asif Qureshi, a food consultant formerly with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, thinks the answer can be found in barley. Dr. Qureshi's father, a doctor, always insisted that his patients from the villages of Punjab in Pakistan rarely had heart disease because they ate a lot of barley. So in an exciting study that began in 1977, Dr. Qureshi isolated an active component in barley that suppressed the liver's ability to make cholesterol. It's called tocotrienol, or inhibitor 1. Two other inhibitors were also found, and all were present throughout the kernels of barley, rye, and oats, particularly in the outer layers. Now, this outer layer is the idea behind a popular cholesterol pill called Mevacor, and it blocks an enzyme in the liver that stimulates LDL, that is the bad chemistry in your body. in testing the cholesterol of chickens raised on oats, corn, wheat, rye, and barley, Dr. Qureshi found nothing unusual in the blood of corn-fed chickens. Wheat and rye suppressed cholesterol slightly. Oats suppressed it a bit more, but barley, good old barley, caused cholesterol to plummet to 76 milligrams per 100 liters doing it, and fiber reduces cholesterol by moving food through your system quickly, reducing absorption time. Now, when all of the fiber was removed from the barley, the chicken's cholesterol still dropped sharply. Researchers discovered that the three inhibitors in barley deactivate an enzyme in the liver needed to make cholesterol. But not only that, they suppress the liver's ability to make LDL and bad cholesterol that clogs arteries. Levels of HDL, the good cholesterol, remained intact. These three inhibitors in barley are also present in lesser amounts in other grains and vegetables. Where they act as powerful drugs to suppress the liver's ability to produce cholesterol. This is a major reason vegetarians have much less heart disease, says this expert, and they are constantly eating these cholesterol-lowering compounds. Cholesterol-lowering compounds, vegetarians. Well, you got to say this for them. They're not adding any fat to their diets like we do when we eat McDonald's. And that's because Americans eat about 247 pounds of red meat a year, of which half of it is hamburger, of which 30% of that is fat by law. So keep that in mind, that when you're eating animal fat, that is the animal fat that causes the problem. That's where your cholesterol is coming from. What is it that takes it out? Barley and barley green. It's not the only thing that does it, but it's probably one of the active ingredients in chelation therapy. I told you about my chelation experience. It's cheap, it's effective, works like a shot, cleans your arteries right out. But so will this barley green, oven by itself. So if you've got clogged arteries or you're plugged up and the doctor says to you what you need is bypass surgery, you want to remember that bypass surgery is going to turn you into an invalid for the rest of your life. You'll never be able to live your life normally again. Now, I guess living an abnormal, invalid life is better than dying, but you can beat both. You can beat the doctor out of his $100,000, and you can beat death, and barley is the way to do it. Barley green is the product. Now, there's another group of foods over here called omega-3 food, and it was actually blessed by Jesus. He says, I am the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I'll give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. That's in Revelation 21:6. And one of his disciples, Andrew, said to him, there is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what is that among so many? And Jesus said, well, make the people sit down. So the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. Then Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed them to the people as they sat there. He did the same with the fish, and they had as much as they wanted. That's recorded in John 6, verses 1 through 13. Now, the sea may well be the water of life to which God refers in the book of Revelation. Apparently, to the healthy, we need all of the things that seawater contains. The most valuable, of course, is fish. In the apocryphal book of Tobit, chapter 2, verse 10, for example, we're told how Tobit was blinded by white patches that covered his eyes. And in answer to his prayers, the angel Raphael appeared and told Tobit's son, Tobias, to apply the gall of a fish to his father's eyes. So Tobias applied the remedy carefully, and the white patches shrank and peeled off. Tobit's sight was restored, so he praised God. Well, fish appear again and again in the miracles and in the words of the Messiah. And it was on the shores of Galilee that Jesus launched his ministry. Christ's first 4 disciples were fishermen. The fish for food is described more frequently in the New Testament than anywhere else in the Bible, especially in the wonderful miracle of the loaves and the fishes, which says to me that there is an unusual food available to us all. And even more fascinating is the fact that a fish was chosen to be one of the first symbols of Christianity, because the first 5 letters of the word fish in Greek stood for the initial letters of the 5 words Jesus Christ, God's Son, and Savior. And a fish was the secret emblem Christians in hiding used to recognize one another. Now, there's a universal miracle cure here, and only in the last decade have scientists begun to understand how right the Bible is, as an astonishing array of ailments cured or relieved by fish comes to light. For example, to name just a few, AIDS, arthritis, asthma, blindness, blood clots, breast cancer, clogged arteries, colon cancer, diabetes, enteritis, glaucoma, heart attacks, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, lupus, macular degeneration, migraines, multiple sclerosis, oh my gosh, psoriasis, rheumatoid arthritis, stroke, ulcerative colitis, and then the one we're having a problem with here is Osteoarthritis. No, as tough as I thought it was. Osteoarthritis. Let's see, that's 5, 10, 15, 20 different diseases. Well, then, how does this omega-3 food work anyway? You've probably heard that term, omega-3 fatty acids. And Joel Wallach, if you'll remember, pointed out that there was 12 or 16 of these fatty acids that you have to have. Well, the bad guys in many painful inflammatory conditions are a group of chemicals called, let's see if I can get these out, prostaglandins, thromboxins, and leukotrienes. Now, that's a mouthful. Well, these chemicals are made from food fat, specifically cooking oils, margarine, corn oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil, salad oils, and meat and dairy products. The bad guys, known collectively as omega-6 fatty acids, are responsible for a wide range of allergic and inflammatory conditions such as asthma, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, lupus, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, psoriasis, and eczema, and many more. The good guys are drugs that suppress and neutralize these disease-producing chemicals such as aspirin, corticosteroids, and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. The trouble with these drugs is their cost and their side effects, which include weight gain, water retention, susceptibility to infection, depression, high blood pressure, diabetes, peptic ulcers, stomach and intestinal bleeding, acne, excess facial hair, insomnia, muscle cramps, weakness, osteoporosis, and susceptibility to blood clots. President Nixon had that problem, susceptibility to blood clots. Well, that's where the fish oils come in. You see, these fish oils have an anti-inflammatory effect similar to powerful drugs without the side effects and at very little cost to in capsule form. These omega-3 fish oil tablets, they're not tablets, they're actually capsules. We buy them in about, I don't know, 200 to 500, pretty good sized bottle. I'd say there's 200 capsules in each bottle. Now, another good source, you know, is just to eat fish. You know, if once a week you were to eat some salmon or eat some kind of fish, you'd be getting these omega-3 fatty acids. If you don't eat fish, then there are these supplements. But what do these supplements contain? What do they do for you, assuming that, you know, you got off on them? Well, omega-3 wards off cancer. Omega-3 wards off HIV and rheumatoid arthritis. Now, that's three big ones. Eating fish cures or prevents cancer, HIV, and rheumatoid arthritis. Well, it makes all the sense in the world if you think about it. Remember, all disease comes from either a nutritional deficiency or a toxic condition. You are breathing poisons. You live in Los Angeles and you're breathing polluted air. You are drinking polluted water. So when you drink the water in Los Angeles, you're drinking chlorine and fluoride. When you're breathing the air, God knows how many chemicals and toxins are in that air that you're breathing. That toxic condition in your body goes on and on and on year after year after year. It's probably exacerbated by bad diet on top of it. That is, you're eating a lot of Hershey bars and chocolate and ice cream and all the good things in life. You don't get enough of the nutrients, and you're probably not very high on this thing of omega fatty acids or omega-3. As a result of that, you come down with cancer, heart attack, stroke, or some other debilitating disease. You say, gee, I don't understand why. Or what could I do to prevent that? And I always talk about, well, have a good diet. Boys and girls, you people out there who are overweight, you haven't got a clue as to what a good diet is, or you wouldn't be overweight. You don't have a clue. So when somebody says to you, well, you need to get on a good diet, what in the hell are they talking about? If you knew how to get on a good diet, you would have already done it, wouldn't you? I've never talked to anybody yet that would, no, I don't want a good diet, I want a bad diet. How bad can my diet be? What can I do to kill myself? I haven't run across anybody like that. Now, when you talk to people, they say, well, my diet's pretty good, pretty good. They don't say, well, my diet is excellent, or my diet is outstanding, or my diet is very good. They say, well, it's pretty good, pretty good. Then if you go on to step further, say, well, what do you call a pretty good diet? Well, I eat meat and potatoes. You eat meat and potatoes. How do you cook these potatoes? Well, I like hamburger and french fries. That's my meat and potatoes. Maybe you have a salad with some salad dressing on it that has hydrogenated vegetable oil, topped off with maybe some Hydrox cookies, you know, that are also made with hydrogenated vegetable oil. And then we wonder why we're sick. We call these, you know, well, I have a pretty good diet. No, that's a terrible diet. That's really a bad diet. There was a neat movie put out as a videotape. It's called Super Size Me. The guy's pretty funny. And he went on this McDonald's diet for 30 days. They ate nothing but McDonald's for 30 days. Before he went on the diet, he goes to three or four doctors and they check him out. They give him every test you can think of. This guy's in top physical condition. He doesn't have anything wrong with him. 30 days later, this guy has a basket case ready for the hospital and Roto-Rooter surgery in 30 days, just eating McDonald's. They had some nutritionists on there, and they interviewed, and they said, how often do you think you should eat a McDonald's? And most of them said never. Some of them said, well, you know, you might get away with it once a month, which would be 12 McDonald's meals a year. 12. And they've got people that are addicted to McDonald's food and they eat it at least five times a week. Now, that's at least five times a week. They probably eat it seven times, eight times, nine times a week. But they always eat it five times a week. Now, those are the real serious McDonald's eaters. And we wonder why 27% of us now are obese or that we're overweight. Now, numerous studies show that fish oil consistently decreases the size of animal tumors and the number of tumors and their tendency to spread. Colon polyps in humans, fish oil seems to suppress precancerous colon polyps. Breast cancer. Dr. Blackburn finds that fish oil given to breast cancer patients before and after surgery slows down cancer activity. Rashida, I'm going to pause right there. Hang on a second. You know that when you have a heart attack, that your doctor takes you off of fat, he takes you off of pork? You know that? Has it ever occurred to anybody that if the doctor is going to take you off of something after you have had surgery or after you've had a heart attack, that maybe that stuff would be even better for you before the surgery or before the heart attack? Has that ever occurred to anybody? See, our problem here in America is that we have all these competing interests. And you have the food industry and their advertising. Where do they advertise? They advertise on television. Television is the same medium that gives us our news, gives us facts and information. So you take a look, for instance, down in Florida, there was a team of investigative reporters, and they wanted to do a story on milk. I'm sure that all of you vegetarians out there, you know, just about puked when I said the word milk. You know, that milk to a vegetarian, you know, is like the four-letter F word, you know, to a virgin. It's just shocking to the senses. Well, anyway, these two reporters, they come in, they've gone out and done their investigation, and they got all their facts together, and they go to put this on the air. And the TV station evidently made the information available to the dairy council or the dairy advertising board or whatever it was. And so they looked at this and they said, if you put that on your TV station, we will withdraw all of our advertising. So the TV station, you know, says, okay, well, then we won't put that on. Now, that's not free speech, and that doesn't have anything to do with educating the public or the public's right to know. It has everything to do with monopoly. And it has a great deal to do with just plain greed. Greed on the part of the dairymen and greed on the part of the TV station. The dairymen don't want you to know the truth about milk, and the TV station isn't about to tell you the truth about milk and offend the dairymen because they advertise their milk products over the TV station. And this is why we don't have very much in the way of truth on television or in the media. And it's not just the dairymen. Hell, it's everybody. Everybody. So, you know, I'd do the same thing. If somebody, you know, said, well, let me give you the straight skinny on that Gordon Law School and let me tell you about that guy Gordon, and then they come knock on my door and say, by the way, we'd like you to take out some advertising on our station. So we're gonna bash you, Gordon, but we want you to advertise on our station. Would I advertise on his station? The answer is hell no. I wouldn't spend a dime with somebody that's gonna beat up on my product or what I'm telling you, what I'm selling, what I'm doing. So you can't very well blame the Mid-American dairies, and you can't very well blame the TV station. Now, television isn't the only place that you can get information. The information that I'm giving you is available. It's been out there. Hell, it's been around for 4,000 years. It's not something that's new. But you're not going to get the straight skinny off of 60 Minutes or 2020. Oh, they're interesting and they're neat to listen to, and I like to listen to 2020 or Dateline or 60 Minutes and get some exposés, but they're not exposing something that has to do with food or the American Medical Association. That isn't going to happen. And that's because they make their living off of all of these advertisements. They're not gonna beat up on the drug companies and tell you the truth about iatrogenic disease. That isn't gonna happen. But there's a guy here that can give you that information, and his name is Reese Dubin, R-E-E-S-E-D-U-B-I-N, Reese Dubin. And the book is called Miracle Food Cures from the Bible, published by Prentice Hall. And so I recommend it very highly. It's not the only book on the subject. There's a lot of them out there. I call this a 1 in 20 book. I rate my books, you know, 1 in 20, 1 in 100. If it's a 1 in 20, that simply says to you, well, you'll read about 20 books, and you'll pick up this book, and you'll read it, and you'll learn something. 1 in 100 is really rare. Hey, let me give you a reminder here before we continue on, and that is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Our website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the web page or the website. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and ordering it. Remember, it's free. And the number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners, as we're doing here this week with this book. But these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to endorse and recommend us. Most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed in whole or totally by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've talked about barley and hawthorn, gentian violet, I-cup, cinnamon buckets, essiac, charoset, parsley, celery, aloe vera. And listen, this book contains probably 50 or 75 more. I don't know how many are in here. I didn't count them all. But it's a book of information on herbs from the Bible that will give you the scientific basis of why it is that these herbs cure or heal and why it is they're called miracle foods. Now, some of the most famous Bible foods fight AIDS, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and more. That's in chapter 14. And remember, I'm just kind of skipping around here and pulling out a little information here and a little information there about these miracle foods. And I don't think you have to be a food fanatic. I'm not a food fanatic. I eat Hershey bars. I eat all kinds of nasty stuff that's really not good for me. And I'm smart enough that I can sit here and say, you know, this isn't very good for me, and I ought not to be eating very much of this. You know, it's kind of like ice cream. The other day we were coming home, and my wife said, you know, I just got a real hankering for ice cream. Now, I've done some stories here on ice cream. And I mean, this ice cream, it tastes great. I mean, this ice cream, this Häagen-Dazs, oh, God, that's good. I love it. That stuff, do you know that stuff contains antifreeze? I'm not kidding here, kids. I'm telling you that ice cream contains antifreeze. Ice cream contains simple sugars. I mean, the real nasty stuff. I mean, the stuff that, you know, is going to kill you. That's the bottom line. But, you know, I was raised in the era when we drank Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, and ate ice cream and popcorn, went to the movies and ate candy, you know, stuffed ourselves with all kinds of good stuff. But that good stuff gave me a heart attack in 1984. So I took a look at my lifestyle, and I took a look at my health, and my family, the Gordon family, all died, all the men. Some women lived to be in their 60s, but the men died in their 40s and 50s, and they almost all died from coronary. And I just kind of figured as a kid growing up, well, I'm going to live to be about 40, 45, like Uncle Al, and kick off, you know, with a heart attack. Now, 40 or 45 when you're 10, 15 years old is forever. When you get to be 38, 45 ain't far away. So around 1983, I got off on this Dr. Lester, and he asked me, I was sitting in his office one day, and right off the top of his head, he said, how long have you had that heart pain? And I said, how the hell do you know I got heart pain? And he says, I can see it in your ear. And he was looking at the lobe of my ear, and had this real deep crease. You just take a look at people who have a real deep crease in their earlobe. And that's heart disease. That's atherosclerosis showing up right there. It isn't that this guy's psychic. It isn't that this guy is a witch or a warlock. This guy is simply a scientist who's looking at cause and effect. He just looks at you and says, hell, you've got advanced atherosclerosis. Therefore, you've got to have heart pain from time to time. And I said, yeah, I do. And he said, well, have you got heart problems in your family? And I said, yeah, we do. Now, a lot of times doctors will say, well, you got a genetic predisposition to a heart attack. That's BS. BS. God did not make a mistake when he created you. Families eat the same foods, and the Gordons ate lots of fat, lots of clams and oysters and crabs and barnacles, and you know, all the stuff that loads you up with toxins. You know, we drank, we smoked, and chased wild women. It's the hallmark of the Gordon clan. And of course, we all die young, live hard, die young, and leave beautiful memories. So I thought, well, what could I do to make some meaningful changes? And I wasn't about to become a health food nut, because I'm not to this day. Not to this day. But, you know, we can be a little bit smarter. You know, for instance, I took a look at the smoking trip, and I said, you know, how much do I need to smoke? I like to smoke. Smoking feels real good. Do I really need to smoke? And I said, well, it's either you got to make a choice here, Gordon. It's either you smoke and die young, or you quit smoking and maybe you live a little longer. And so I said, well, what do you want to do, die young or live a little longer? And so I came to the conclusion I want to live a little longer. In fact, I want to live a whole lot longer. So I said, okay, well, then the only logical solution is quit smoking. So how simple that is? You know, you come to a conclusion. Oh, I guess I better quit smoking. Okay, now that posed a little problem because, you know, just going out here cold turkey and knocking off weed, you know, is a little difficult to do. But, you know, once you make up your mind to it and you get on the program, you control yourself, you know, you can do it. If I can do it, you can do it. Millions of people have smoked and millions of people have quit. And if those people can quit, you can quit. So I quit smoking. Well, that's a step in the right direction. But it doesn't solve all of your problems. It doesn't do everything all the time. Now, food's pretty important. But, you know, I kind of like to eat meat. So I looked in the Bible to find out, well, did Jesus eat meat? And I found out that in the Scripture, God isn't opposed to eating meat. God is opposed to eating some meat. Some meat. You know, like raw dog is not too good for you. Raw dog is one of those meats that you ought to probably leave alone. Turtle, alligator. I was down in New Orleans one time, and we stopped in a restaurant, some little town. Went in. Now, you know, I've been around for a while. I've been traveling for years. It's the only state in the union this happens. The only place I ever had to have. Walked in this restaurant, sat down, picked up the menu, and there's nothing on here that I can eat. I mean, everything on here has got, you know, shrimp or lobster or crab or something, and I can't eat. So I said to the waitress, I said, listen, you know, we're Hebrews and we don't practice we do practice the dietary laws and we don't practice the eating of these unclean foods. Could you mix something up? Could you mix and match and do a little, you know, because they had some good stuff there, but the good stuff is always mixed with something else. She said, no, we don't. No, you can't order this stuff, you know, bits and pieces. I mean, you can have this dish here and you can have that dish over there, but no, you can't have half of this dish and half of that dish and combine them. So I said, well, I guess that answers my question. I got up and walked out. You know, it's the only place I've ever had that happen to me. It was some little town down in Louisiana. Now, if I have to get up and walk out, then that's what I'm going to have to do. And so you may have to do the same thing. But these clean and unclean meat laws over here, there's 18 of them, 18 health laws in the Bible. And so I thought, well, could I practice one or two of those? That might be a step in the right direction. Then I got 3 or 4, 5, 9, 11, 15. I said, hell, if I can do that, I can do them all. I can do them all. The only guys that can't obey God and keep his commandments are the religious people led by the preachers. Now, they can't practice the law of God, and they tell you very plainly, nobody can do that, so we're not even going to try. I don't think that's true. For instance, let me give you a little test over here. In Leviticus 11, I think about verse 7 or something like that, it says, don't eat pig. Now, I don't know about you, but, you know, I don't eat baked wharf rat. Never have, don't tend to, and ain't starting now. So I figured if I could avoid, if I could stay off of, if I could live my life without eating baked wharf rat, I probably could live the rest of my life without eating baked ham. So I thought, well, let me give it a shot, and I did. And sure enough, I can live without baked ham. Well, then I thought, what can I do without the pork chops? Can I do without the bacon with my eggs in the morning? And sure enough, yeah, I can do it. I figured, hell, if I can do it, you probably can do it. Let me tell you something else. You've got about 100 million Muslims out there. But it's more than that. 100, it's 126 million Arabs. It's a billion Muslims. One-sixth of humanity are called Muslims. Now, those Muslims, they don't eat pig in any way, shape, form, or manner. And I just kind of figured that if a billion Muslims could live their lives without eating pig, then a billion Christians could probably do the same thing if they put their minds to it. You know what I mean? So when I listen to Christians over here says, you can't do this over here, I say, oh, wait a minute, hang on a second. Because there's a billion other people over here can do it. Now, if that billion people can do it, why in the hell can't those Christians do it? The answer is they don't want to. They don't want to. And I don't want to wake them up. I'm not here to tell you something you don't want to hear. Turn the dial. Now, if you want to hear it, then turn the volume up a little bit, and let's make sure that we get this down straight. This guy goes out, and he looks into the Bible, and he finds a number of foods mentioned in the Bible, such as barley, which I just covered. Then he goes to the medical literature and says, Jesus, barley, has it got any value to it? And the scientists have taken it apart, done everything they could, identified all of its constituent parts, tested it on lab rats and people, and said, my God, this stuff cures cancer. This stuff is anti-inflammatory. It decreases pain, does all these neat things. And then we find it's suppressed, like Laetrile, discovered by the Mayo Clinic. And then they suppress it. Cures cancer, they suppress it. Well, as I pointed out, it makes all the sense in the world because it's too cheap and it doesn't make profit. So for you and I, you know, I'm sitting over here, do I need to support the medical establishment? And I'm telling you that from George Gordon's point of view, I don't give a damn if they live or die. I don't give a rat's rectum whether the average doctor makes his book payment next month or doesn't. I don't care. I'm not going to support them. If you want to support them, get after it. I'm not opposed to you going to the doctor. Hell, my Aunt Floy spent all of her money going to the doctors, gave her something to talk about at the dinner table. I'm not spending my money on doctors. I'd rather spend my money on something more intelligent. And I'm sure you can figure out something that you'd rather spend money on than doctor bills. In fact, about half the bankruptcies in the country today, 2006, half the bankruptcies here in the United States are coming from medical bills. I mean, you people are off on these medical doctors and hospitals and hospital bills and so on, and you can't afford it. And so you're ending up in bankruptcy. That isn't fun. Hell, that's not quite as bad, but almost as bad as divorce. Now, in chapter 14, he talks about Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's. Now, you know, this Parkinson's disease is kind of a nasty way to die. You see, it reminds me of Lou Gehrig's disease, just a very poor way to die. And Alzheimer's, when your brain just deteriorates, or Jacob's Crutchfield disease, you know. Well, during their 40 years of wandering in the desert, the Israelites were often discouraged and they wanted to turn back. To their leaders, they complained, "You've led us out here into the desert to die." And in this atmosphere of discontent, when Moses' brother Aaron was appointed high priest, they questioned his authority. So Moses prayed for guidance, and he was instructed by God to have each family bring a rod with the name of the head of the family carved on it. On the rod of the house of Levi, Moses carved Aaron's name, and the rods were presented in the great tent or the tabernacle. And the next day, when Moses went into the tabernacle, the rod of Aaron had sprouted, it budded, and it blossomed, and it bore ripe almonds. Almonds. Now, the word for almond in ancient Hebrew means gift from God. The miracle of the rod that sprouted almond blossoms can still be witnessed to this day. If the tip of a branch of an almond tree is placed in water or wrapped in a wet cloth, it will sprout blossoms overnight. The almond tree is the first in the Holy Land to flower, producing its lovely pink blossoms from bare and apparently lifeless branches as the first sign of spring, renewed life, and the awakening of creation. Now, there are two principal forms of almonds, the sweet almonds and bitter almonds. These sweet almonds are valuable as food and also as medicine. Bitter almonds must be used with caution because they contain cyanide, which is a poison. Cyanide. And that's the objective, or the objection, that the medical community, the allopathic medical doctors, put up to Leotril. They said, wait a minute, these almond pits, these almonds have cyanide in them. These peach pits, these apricot pits, they've got cyanide in them. Boys and girls, there are all kinds of chemical compounds taken to excess that'll kill you. Nicotine is so potent that we use it as an insecticide. When I was a kid, they used to sell that, I don't think you can buy it now, but you know, as a kid you could still buy it, as nicotine, liquid nicotine. It's kind of a syrup-like stuff. And you mixed it with water, and then you sprayed it on the chicken roost, and it would kill all the mites, lice, and fleas. It was an insecticide. But this nicotine is kind of innocuous, and you could get it, you could ingest it accidentally. Well, a number of people accidentally got hold of their nicotine, and they got nicotine poisoning, and it killed them. Now, you people that smoke, you know, you're smoking, and you want this nicotine, but you want it in very small quantities. Let me show you how small it is. One drop of nicotine in a chicken's mouth will kill it in 60 seconds. Just take a chicken, about a 5-pound bird, put one drop of nicotine into that chicken's mouth, and in 60 seconds, he'll be flapping his wings dead. Now, that's a pretty potent poison. Now, we haven't banned cigarettes in the United States. Now, here's this toxic poison called nicotine. We take another very toxic poison called fluoride and another one called chlorine, and we stick it in our water to kill the bacteria in the water, and we feed it to people. Now, don't believe for a minute now that your government's trying to protect you from cyanide poisoning by keeping you away from almonds and peach pits. Let's grow up and get real, shall we? And the reason they don't want you using peach pits and almonds and apricot pits is because of the cyanide, that is the biological chemical called cyanide, that's in these, in an organic compound that kills cancer. Now listen to this. Centuries ago, it was discovered that when a tablespoon of crushed almonds was slowly simmered in milk or thin hot barley gruel for about 30 minutes and then given to somebody with indigestion, their stomach or intestinal pains ceased in a matter of minutes. It gives you relief for stones, gravel, kidney, and bladder problems. Blanched and beaten into emulsion with barley water, sweet almonds are of great use in the stone, gravel, and other disorders of the kidneys, bladder, and the biliary ducts. And then set your aging clock back 20 years with this do-it-yourself facelift. And then fun to eat, good for the heart. And then here's Leotril. Listen to this Leotril story. Remember Leotril, discovered at the Mayo Clinic, allopathic medical doctors. The bitterness in the bitter almond is due to the presence of the glycoside, amygdalin. I believe that's the way you pronounce it, amygdalin, which has been used in cancer chemotherapy since 1845. And its other name, which most people are more familiar with, is Leotril. Leotril. This Leotril was said to release hydrocyanic acid into the body, which destroys cancer cells, leaving normal cells intact. The evidence for and against Leotril is strong. The evidence for and against. Well, all the evidence against it comes from medical doctors, who are the guys that discovered the stuff to start with. And the Leotril, that is vitamin B17, that's what they call it now, is B17, has the same properties in it as does the bloodroot. Bloodroot is an active tumor killer. It's a poison. It's a biological poison. When you ingest it, it goes, and it doesn't kill your other cells. It just kills cancer cells. That's the crazy part of it. That's why I think that it was designed by God, a designer, a creator, a master engineer, a master chemist. And he said, you know, people are going to eat pig, and when they get pig, they're going to get cancer. When they get cancer, we got to have a remedy. And so we'll put the remedy in an almond, peach, and an apricot pit. We'll call it cyanide. We'll do it organically. We'll call it organic, what do they call that, biochemical agent. That's the organic cyanide, not inorganic. And there's quite a difference now between organic chemical compounds and inorganic chemical compounds. Stick with the organic. That's the way to fly. And it will kill the tumors. Now, here's your problem. We talked about this a little earlier. Yeah, you can take the Laetril, and it'll kill the tumor. Hell, you can take these poison chemicals called chemotherapy, and it'll kill the tumor. And then your body has to dispose of those dead cells. And it has killed so many cells so fast, it plugs up your liver, and you die from autotoxemia. That's why in the ESIAC formula, for instance, after you've killed the cancer cells, you got to have a way to get them out of your body. And that's what the detoxifiers are for. Certain herbs will take those toxins out of your body. Now, activated charcoal is one of them. Activated charcoal, and when you take an inorganic compound, you know, like cyanide or arsenic, it will gather it up, neutralize it, and dispose it, take it out of your body. And the guy that tested it was a French chemist, took 3 grams of arsenic, followed by massive doses, we don't know how much, but massive doses of activated charcoal with no ill effects. So what we see here isn't witchcraft, and we're not talking about magic. We're not talking about religion. We're just talking about plain science, and plain science that has been in folk medicine that's been in the Bible for 3,000 or 4,000 years. And that's the bottom line. Remember, the book again is called Miracle Food Cures from the Bible, Reese Dubin, R-E-E-S-A-D-U-B-I-N, Reese Dubin, published by Prentice Hall. Again, that's Miracle Food Cures from the Bible, Reese Dubin, R-E-E-S-A-D-U-B-I-N, published by Prentice Hall. There's the story. I'm about out of time again. Time flies when you're having fun. Let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School here in Isabel, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our webpage. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. Got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.